your latest episode of Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today's our host, Evan Sutter, but the very special guest of today's show, Gerald Bourget of FanSided. He's always enjoy having Gerald on. He's also with me all the time at Suns games, covering them as well. Gerald, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good, Evan. How about you?
Doing great. Appreciate you coming on here because we have a fun episode for you guys. So we're going to talk through the big three, so to say. I know Mikhail's not on that list yet, so to say, but I think we both are in agreement that Mikhail has a very high trajectory. We're going to go over Devin Booker, DeAndre, and Mikhail Bridges, those three players and their player development so far this year. What stood out most to Gerald and I, and what could be ahead for them if we play the games in Orlando and also next season? Because I think these three are the quintessential pieces to the Suns being a key team as far as rebuilding and going ahead and improving year by year. But we're going to start off here, Gerald, with your overall thoughts on Devin Booker this season, because I know we hit on the podcast before that it seems like Booker continues every single year, Gerald, to hit. It's unfair, really, to put any expectations or ceiling on Devin Booker, because every single time I try to do that, he breaks through, and this year was no different.
Yeah, I mean, he was at his most efficient, and it was incredible to watch what he could do with an actual point guard to take that pressure off him to both score and play make with, you know, a lot of mediocre or underwhelming teammates. You've seen what he's capable of when they put actual NBA veterans, actual established NBA players around him. 26 points, almost 7 assists a game, 4 rebounds. And he was flirting with 50-40-90 territory for most of the year until the last month or so, I believe. So it was impressive to watch him live up to expectations. Even though the Suns are not a 500 team or, you know, not a playoff-bound team in a normal year with normal playoff settings, it's been good to see them take at least some sort of step forward, because the last 4 years we've been able to watch his individual brilliance, but not any sort of team success. And it's nice to see them at least take a step toward that this year.
Yeah, this past year for Booker, which is still ongoing, 61.7 true shooting percentage on a 29 usage percentage. I want to hit on that. I'm glad you brought up at the start of it, Gerald, just about Ricky Rubio and the stabilizing presence he brought the point guard position, because when you look at just the ragtag group the Suns have had point guard the last couple of years, sans Eric Bledsoe, Mike James of the world, the Elfrid Payton's of the world, was a really rough time. I can't believe Isaiah Cannon was the opening night starter last year. You just think about the nightmare ride that was at point guard. How nice was it just to see Devin Booker finally just realize his full potential, really having less pressure on him as well with Rubio alongside him?
It was great for multiple reasons. A, for, you know, just the watchability of the Suns to be able to see Devin Booker being more optimized in an off-ball role, but still giving him the ball plenty. Also for a kind of I told you so perspective, because we've been telling people for years that Devin Booker is good, that he's not just a, you know, good stats, bad team player. And this was the first year that we started to look more and more right about it. To the outside audience that doesn't sit through Suns games all season long. So Rubio, I mean, he was averaging almost 9 assists a game. I think he was 3rd or 4th in the league in assists. He was in the top 5. And, you know, that's being despite not being a great 3-point shooter. I don't think – obviously Rubio is not the long-term solution probably, and the Suns will need to groom up a new point guard who fits their long-term timeline better. But right now he is the perfect piece to help get the Suns back on the right trajectory, to help Devin Booker maximize his game. And it's been good to watch that unfold, even if this season has been, you know, obviously shortened and broken up by a lot of injuries to various Suns throughout the year.
Look at the assist numbers for Booker for a second, Joe. Like you mentioned, 6.6 assists per game. Rubio also as well, right up around 9. Was it surprising to you that even still with Rubio on board, that Booker was still putting up these really good assist numbers over a 30-plus assist percentage again this year for the back-to-back years? It seems like Booker is really showing the NBA and also just the Suns community that he is really truly a combo guard. And he, if they get off the reins to him eventually, who knows if they ever go that James Harden path with Devin Booker. But I feel more and more confident, especially with Rubio on board, that he's still putting up those good assist numbers, that he's legitimately become a really good underrated passer.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think if you had told me that Ricky Rubio before the season, if you had told me that Rubio was going to average about 9 assists a game, I would have thought Booker's had dropped to, like, you know, 4 assists a game or something like that. He's still flirting with 7 a night. And it's been impressive to watch that, because last year, you know, the growth that he showed in the playmaking department a lot of people chalk that up to, well, he always has the ball in his hands and he has to do everything, so of course his numbers are going to be higher. But he's showing this year that those weren't inflated statistics, that he's genuinely a good passer. You know, obviously the turnovers still need to come down. He's averaging about 4 a game, but again, that's to be expected until he has other superstar players around him. And hopefully some of these guys on the roster, these younger guys that we're going to talk about, will take that step. But it has been impressive to watch him maintain relatively high assist numbers despite Ricky Rubio running the show and leading the team on the playmaking front.
Yeah, it really has been. And that's really one underrated aspect we're going to continue to watch Booker as he develops, because I think it is, if they really do want to go down that Harden path eventually, who knows if they do or not, I think it's something that should be explored more often, as the listeners know. But we'll hit on that later on in the show or later on this offseason, because I think that's something that should be explored more and more. But I want to hit on this for a second, Gerald. That January stretch of Devin Booker put together, which he went absolutely supernova, and still shocking me. I know the Suns didn't win that many games in January, but 31 points, 6.5 assists per game on a 65 true shooting percentage that entire month. What was it like watching that up close? Because I know Brent and I used to talk about it on the podcast all the time, just about that entire month he was putting up 40-plus, 35, 30. I think there was at least 11 straight games at one point he scored 30 points in that month of January. I feel like that was a sneak peek of what's to come in his prime. But what was it like watching that month where he kind of solidified himself as, like, if something does happen with the Damian Lillard, which you saw with the injury replacement, that he really is becoming, like, blossoming into that kind of superstar all-star role?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hinted at it there, is that month was the validation for what we had been saying all season long, that Devin Booker deserves, absolutely deserved, an all-star spot. And he really sort of solidified that in that month. It was incredible to watch. Obviously, the team was kind of up and down during that stretch, but again, dealing with a lot of injuries, it was impressive what he was able to do. Even in some defeats, you know, he had 40 against the Grizzlies in a loss. He had 39 against the Hawks in a loss. The guy was just putting up insane numbers. And on the occasions that the Suns won in that month, he was usually the reason behind it. I think he only had like one game that was kind of a dud. It was like a 12-point game. But he was just incredible that month. And we saw what he's capable of doing when he is fully locked in, and hopefully we'll get to see more of that when he has the right accompanying and healthy talent around him.
Last few I had on Booker before we go on DeAndre in a second, Gerald, and the next one is on his defense. I know it was a big question mark for Booker, and it still is, because he's obviously not an elite defender, so to say, but the improvement we saw, at least on the margins from Booker this year, is pretty noticeable on the court, Gerald, because you look at his advanced numbers too. His defensive win shares his first 4 years is 0.7, 0.6, 0.6, career low 0.3 last year, but then this year it's up to 1.2, which is the first time it's ever happened for Booker. Did you notice this year at all just how much it seemed like Booker, especially in the first part of the year, where he was actually given a lot more effort? I know when he put more points in January, his effort kind of lapsed on the defensive end, but a lot more consistency on that end this year, Gerald, as far as defense goes from Booker.
Yeah, I mean, I still wouldn't say he's a good defender. Obviously, he's still below average on that front, but especially early in the year, when defense was the focus for this team, when everyone was healthy, he was locked in on that end and he was pretty serviceable. And that's all the Suns need him to be on that end, with as good as he is offensively. You think about some of the star talents in this league, like James Harden, Russell Westbrook, they're not good defenders. Sometimes they can be downright bad defenders, but they do more than enough on the other end to make up for it. Now, Booker's not quite in the Harden class yet, but he is going to be able to do enough to where, if he's just serviceable on that end, if he can just hold his own and not be a consistent target for the offense on that end, that's all the Suns need from him, because they have other pieces around him that should be at least serviceable or good defenders, in very good defenders in Mikal Bridges' case. So I think the progress he showed early on was very encouraging. I think as the year went on, he maybe got a little fatigued, especially because he had to do so much more, you know, between Ayton's 25-game suspension and players being in and out of the lineup and all of that stuff. The Suns leaned on him a little bit more heavily, so that takes its toll. But I do think that what we saw early on, and if this team can just stay healthy, he can at least be average. And if he can do that, the Suns are going to be more respectable on that end in the future.
last one I had for you, Gerald, on Booker, because I think the next step for him, like I mentioned at the top of the show, who knows what the ceiling is for Devin Booker at this point, because each year he's improving little parts of his game, becoming so well-rounded, and earned his first career All-Star this year in 2020 for him. But what do you think is the next step for Booker entering into, maybe if you want to hit on Orlando, or if you want to hit on just 2020, 2021 as a whole in year six for Booker, what do you think is the next steps for him in his career?
Yeah, I mean, I think for as far as Orlando is concerned, it would be great to see him just come in with that competitive fire and just go off. Even if the Suns aren't winning a lot of games, because it's going to be tough. They have a pretty tough schedule, and Oubre is not playing, which is obviously a big blow. But I think if he just goes in and plays with poise and, you know, shows what he's been showing us night in and night out over the last few years that a lot of other people haven't seen, I think that's good enough for the Suns in this playoffs. You know, obviously expectations are high. Hopefully they, you know, win some games and make a push for that nine spot. But that might not be realistic without Oubre. So I would like to see him just come out and, you know, pedal to the metal, which will be difficult because these guys will have not played in 4.5 months by the time July comes around. But that's what I would say for the playoffs this year, for next year, and just in general, as far as the next step, it's got to come on the defensive end. I think he's shown he can score. He's shown he can play make, even with another primary playmaker sharing the backcourt. He's decent enough on the boards. What he needs to do now is commit to that defensive end and make sure that his game is more balanced, make sure that he's not targeted on the defensive end, make sure that he can hold his own. I think that's what's next for him. And I think once that happens and the Suns have the right talent around him, they'll actually start pushing for the playoffs again.
We're going to hit on DeAndre in here in a second with Gerald. But before we do so, I want to remind you guys about a new sponsor of today's show, first-time sponsor, which is Magic Spoon. Growing up, cereal was one of our best parts of being a kid, but we had to give it up, at least some of us, because we realized it was full of sugar and junk that you shouldn't eat. But with Magic Spoon, it changes the entire equation. Zero sugar, 12 grams of protein, only 3 net grams of carbs in each serving, with 4 great flavors too, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry. It tastes amazing, honestly, too good to be true. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and low-carb. Go to magicspoon.com/NBA to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code NBA at checkout to get free shipping. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product that it's backed 100% happiness guaranteed. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money fully, no questions asked. That's magicspoon.com/NBA and use the code NBA for free shipping. Magicspoon.com/NBA, and we thank them for sponsoring today's podcast. Back to you guys in just a second as we dive into DeAndre. All right, Jared, we're back for segment two, diving into the big fella here, DeAndre, and the 4 number 1 overall pick for the Phoenix Suns. And the big steps from him this past year, I know he only played in 30 games due to the ankle injury, due to the suspension. What was your thoughts? Just, I know it seemed like it was a very disappointing year for Aiden as far as games played, but legitimate progress in the court. We should on defense first. I think that's the big elephant in the room that we always talked about in 2018 before he was drafted by the Suns, and also last year. Nearly doubled his blocks per game, and also his block percentage was over double too. Went up to over 4% this past year, 4.5. What was your thoughts on his defensive improvement, Gerald? Because it seemed like Monty Williams and the staff really honed on that, and Ayton really bought in.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to look at where the teams or where the Suns rank in the league in terms of defensive rating and say that, you know, the anchor of that defense is a really good defender. But DeAndre Ayton became at least a serviceable defender this year. And that's what made it so disappointing that he was out for so many games because of the ankle thing and because of the suspension, was that in those 30 games that he was on the court, he showed real progress on that front of becoming the guy that the Suns need him to be on the defensive end in order to, you know, keep him on the court in future playoff games, to, you know, even challenge for the playoffs at all. So, you know, like you said, up to 1.7 blocks per game, averaging about 12 boards per game. He just looked more engaged. He gave more effort. You know, so many times as a rookie, we saw him just, you know, not even challenge a shot or a layup in his territory. And that's where he needs to be so aggressive. And this year we saw him coming over from the weak side, swatting balls out of bounds. You know, making second efforts on plays where the other team gets an offensive rebound, just challenging more shots and showing more effort and energy on that end, which is exactly what we wanted to see from him. I thought he would get there eventually. I wasn't expecting that quick of a turnaround in one season. But, you know, now the thing will be trying to see if he can do that over a full 82-game season, because He was doing it in the time he was on the floor. But, you know, the first game was opening night. So, of course, you're going to have energy that night. And then he was suspended for 25 games. So, of course, when he came back, you know, he had that fire in his belly. He was ready to, you know, compete and make up for that. Now the question is, without those kind of motivational circumstances, is he going to be able to sustain it over a full season?
Yeah, that's the big question, too. And I wonder, just hitting on it for a second, just about that 25-game suspension, how much it stagnated the Suns' progress. I know Aaron Baines did well. He had a really hot stretch, but then we saw in the second half of the year, he cooled off pretty significantly from three. But I wanted to just see your thoughts on this, Gerald, because I really believe that if Ayton wouldn't have been suspended, I know, let's say the ankle issues still pop up from here and there, but missing those 25 games, is it fair to say that the Suns might be in the spot the Grizzlies are in, or at least close to where they are for that play-in spot? Or it seems like Ayton, more and more we see on court, at least through advanced metrics too, that when he's on the court, the Suns are usually doing pretty well for themselves on both ends of the court.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if I would say that they'd be in the Grizzlies' position, but I'd say they'd be a lot closer than they are now. Because, you know, the Suns still did relatively well in those first couple weeks without Bane, or with Baines filling in for Ayton. And, you know, it started to turn south once Baines got hurt as well. And then they had to turn to, you know, Frank Kaminsky. That was a rough stretch there. But I do think that, you know, like you were saying, when Ayton is on the court, generally good things are happening for the Suns team. And it's a pity that he missed 25 games, because you think about a lot of the games where the Suns were just straight up bullied down low. They were losing the battle on the boards. Those are obvious things that Ayton can help out with. They didn't have a rim protector. Baines is a very good positional defender, but he's not a rim protector in the way that Ayton was showing he's capable of being and showed once he came back. So, you know, those are a couple of games that were close in that stretch the Suns could have had that they just didn't. Ayton really could have helped on that front. And obviously it was just unfortunate for their long-term growth as well, because, you know, these young guys, this young core, they need as much time together as possible. They need to bond. They need to learn the ins and outs of each other's games. They need to stay healthy and play together more. And it was just unfortunate that, you know, after such a impressive opening night win, they just take that blow of 25 games, losing their starting center, another cornerstone for the franchise. So that is why it's good that they got this Orlando invite, because even if it is only 8 games, that's still 8 games more that they get together between Ayton, Booker, and Bridges.
I think it's fair to say, like you're mentioning, Gerald, if Orlando does indeed happen, is DeAndre Ayton the most intriguing player from the Suns' perspective you're trying to watch? Because I feel like those 8 games are really going to give us, say, another sneak peek into really him in a tense environment, like winner you go home sort of environment for the Suns team, where they really have to go 7-1, 8-0 to even have a chance in the play-in tournament. I'm really curious to see what Ayton does in those settings if it happens, because I think he's going to be very motivated and also wants to prove to others around the league that he is making that step. But what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think Mikal Bridges is probably my most interesting player on the Suns as far as this goes, because of the absence of Oubre, because of, you know, the flashes we saw in his offense and now getting this chance to step up for a shorthanded Suns starting lineup. But I do think Ayton is kind of the most surprisingly overlooked X factor for this team, because, as you mentioned, he has had plenty of time off to be motivated. It's rough for him because he just came back and was playing, and then the season gets shut down. And, you know, this is already after the 25-game suspension. And we can't ignore the fact that after 4.5 months off, there's going to be a lot of bricks in Orlando. And DeAndre Ayton is one of the best offensive rebounders in the NBA. So that kind of plays to his strengths if these shots are coming off the rim. This is a guy that can go out and, you know, pad his stats a little bit by being active on the boards. As long as he's in good shape, I think that's the X factor for him. But I think DeAndre Ayton has been pretty overlooked in this whole Orlando conversation, just because the focus has usually been on Booker, on how Bridges is going to fill in for Oubre, and then obviously, you know, how Oubre is not going to be playing.
Yeah, looking at Ayton's rebounding, Drew, I'm glad you brought that one up, because 12 rebounds per game in 33 minutes per game, 4 offensive rebounds too. I've been harping on this to listeners on the podcast throughout the year that I think Ayton's really true special trait is rebounding, and especially on the offensive glass. And I think it's fair to say that he could be eventually, maybe even next year, maybe the year after that, maybe a top 3 top two rebounder in the NBA. I know Andre Drummond's had that crown for a while now, but I think like Drummond, he has that elite athletic ability to go up that second bounce super quickly. He has the ability to go up and get these tip ends. I think that's the one swing skill set. I know we kind of maybe underrated looking at him at U of A because he really is a – he can change the game as a rebounder on the offensive glass, and he can gobble up rebounds pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, double-digit rebounds. He's only in his second year in the league, and that's only in 33 minutes a night. You know, if he gets his conditioning up to where he's playing around 35, 36 minutes a night and is able to sustain that same energy over those minutes and sustain those offensive rebounding numbers, he'll be in that conversation. You know, he is clearly the guy in the middle, the pillar on the defensive glass for the Suns. You know, because they've rotated between Dario Saric and Mikal Bridges at the four spot there. So he's the guy that the majority of those boards are going to fall to, especially if the Suns keep that, you know, dynamic Rubio, Booker, Oubre, Bridges, Ayton lineup that that works gangbusters for the Suns. If they keep that intact for next year, he's going to eat on the goal, on the board. So I don't know. Like Drummond just eats up everything at the rim, but I think Ayton will be in that conversation sooner than people realize.
Last one I had for you, Joe, because I know there's two important swing skills that Ayton still needs to work on in his game, and I wonder which one for you at least is more important for year three for his game. And I know his three-pointers, he's talked about since his rookie year, he wants to show it off, but he hasn't been able to do so yet, or he really doesn't feel comfortable doing so yet. Still has not hit a three in his NBA career. But also his free throw attempts. I think that's at least from my standpoint, that's the most important thing he needs to work on next year, because it went down from 2.7 to 2.6 free throw attempts per game. And as a 7-footer, Joe, I think that's almost inexcusable at this point. Just to have the athletic freak that Ayton is, I think it should be getting at least 4 or 5 trips to the line per game. And he'll eventually get to that point, I think. But which do you think is more important as far as a swing skill for Ayton in year three? Do you think it's the free throw attempts or the three-pointer, expanding his range?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more on the free throw front. I think the three-point shooting is like the sexy skill that everyone wants him to have, and I think eventually he'll dive into that area, and it is necessary for him to have that. I think adding a floor spacing five to this team would make them really hard to guard. But in terms of, you know, more realistic goals for next year, I think the free throw thing is way more important because – you know, this is a guy that operates primarily in the paint that they need to get on the line. He's a good free throw shooter when he takes them, but he just doesn't get there very often. And part of that is because he's just so big and tall. A lot of the times when he gets those offensive boards, he's unchallenged on the putback, or he gets a lot of easy buckets around the rim that just go unchallenged because, you know, you look at him, he's 7'1" and just built. You're not going to challenge that a lot of times, but he does need to get to the free throw line more often. That's not an excuse for the low number of free throw attempts. And, you know, you look at the three-point thing, he's only taken three this year, missed all three. It's either a matter of him not being comfortable yet with that shot in games, or the coaching staff, again, not wanting him to take threes. I don't know what it is. They've all been saying that they're comfortable with him taking the shot if it's a good shot for the offense, but I think the unspoken rhetoric behind that is it's not a good shot for the offense yet. So the free throw thing is definitely more important as far as next year is concerned.
Yeah, definitely agree with you on that sentiment, Gerald. We're going to dive into our final segment of the show, talking about Mikal Bridges, who I think we're both in agreement, Gerald. He's the most intriguing player for Orlando and also moving forward, because if he does eventually become more aggressive offensively, I think it changes the entire equation for the Suns rebuild. We're going to hit on our second sponsor of today's show, though, which is Blinkist. It is very helpful. I use it all the time in my car. It's really unique, too. Works on your phone, your tablet, your web browser, and it takes the best key takeaways from books that need no information from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses down to just 15 minutes so you can re-listen to wherever you're at. Like I say always on the show, it's like the spark notes, so to say, of books, and I always enjoy that. If you want to get more efficiency out of a little time, Blinkist does that for you. There's also all these books on tap that Blinkist has. They have so many nonfiction books, fiction books as well. The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss is a great one. Also, you can hit on Sea Stories by William McRaven. These are only ones that I wanted to hit on with you guys. I've also read them. I think there's so many great options, though, like sports, psychology, biology, any sort of genre you want. Blinkist will provide that for you and give it to you in a condensed format, which I think is the best way of doing it nowadays. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to reader lists to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books and all the books you want, all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer for just our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/MBA. You can try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K, IST, Blinkist.com/MBA to start a free 7-day trial. And you also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/MBA. One more time for you guys, Blinkist.com/MBA. Back to you guys in just a second as we go into Mikal Bridges. All right, Gerald, let's dive in now to Mikal. And I think this past year, I know the offense numbers won't show so, but before the season, I'll pause there. I think we're really starting to see a leap from Mikal Bridges offensively, where we're seeing more and more games where he was comfortable taking more shots. And I think that's the big part of his game missing as far as his aggressiveness. He's only at 12% usage again this year. It's just back-to-back years of doing so. But were you intrigued at all when you saw Mikal really having these games where he consistently was like 15, 16 points per game? I know Uber was out for those games, but it feels like he's getting more and more confident there. And that's for a top 10 pick, that's going to have to happen. And Mikal, I think, is showing that with his diligent hard work that he's really close to taking that leap.
Absolutely. I mean, the Suns don't need him to be a 20 points per game scorer. They just need him to be, you know, like you said, around, you know, 13, 15, 16 points a night. That would be huge for them and huge for Mikal's confidence because, you know, we all remember the whole process with the hitch in his jumper. That was largely minimized this season, especially as the year went on. His scoring output only improved from 8.3 points a night as a rookie to 8.7 this year, but it came in fewer minutes and on much better percentages. You know, he's shooting nearly 52% from the floor, 35% from three, almost 85% from the line. Those are good numbers for a guy that was billed as a 3-and-D wing coming into the season. So if he's able to up his scoring output and become a more reliable threat on the offensive end and not just kind of disappear or fade into the background on that end, the Suns are going to be extremely hard to guard. And of course, we all know that he is an elite defender already. It doesn't show based on where the Suns rank defensively in the league, but he is a very good, very underrated defender who can guard multiple positions, who unlocks the Suns' best lineup when he's playing that small ball four spot next to Oubre and Ayton. He's kind of the linchpin upon which the Suns' rebuild depends. Like if this is going to work with him and Booker and Ayton, the Suns need Mikal Bridges to reach that ceiling and to be an effective two-way player.
Yeah, you look at his offensive game as well, Gerald. The two-point percentage was 55% year one, 62% in year two. And I think a lot of that was due to Ricky Rubio and the arrival of a stable point guard once again. We came with Booker in the first segment. But I think it was very noticeable throughout the year that that Bridges and Rubio had really good chemistry and that Mikal really showed, like he did a little bit last year, that I think he's already one of the most underrated elite cutters to the basket in the NBA. He knows how to use and move without the ball a lot, Gerald. And I think it's only going to grow as he gets more and more into his body.
Yeah. I think so. And it's great that he has two guards that are capable of finding him on those cuts because, you know, Rubio is not a threat from the perimeter, but he drives to the basket a lot and will collapse the defense. Devin Booker does the same thing with the ball in his hands. So they are both very good drivers who are able to make that dump off. And, you know, playing with Kelly Oubre helps because Oubre is another sneaky good cutter off the ball who, you know, when those guys go baseline or when they go to the basket, either Bridges or Oubre are usually right behind cutting in some way to get an easy bucket. So that's effective offense for him. And that's a confidence booster as well, because any shooter can tell you, you know, you get a couple easy ones, the rest start to fall so much easier. And I think we saw that with Bridges in a couple of games this year where he started shooting the ball really well. He was also cutting really well during that stretch. So, you know, between him and Oubre being able to cut like that and Devin Booker and Rubio handling the rock and the driving, that's a pretty effective combination, especially if they can have that floor spacing to keep the help defense from collapsing all the time.
Gerald, I wanted to hit on this as well with you because I know on the show we've hit on before about we're believers in the Oubre Bridges coming moving forward as a 3-4 combination. But what about you? Do you think that Mikal and Kelly, as we saw in the advanced numbers, plus 20.2 net rating, that this could be a sustainable long-term thing where you, I think with DeAndre, and it also helps input him a little bit as far as he likes to be on the perimeter, he likes switching a lot, and you have these two aggressive, hyperactive wings around inside him, making a little bit of a smaller ball. I think it actually helps not only Ayton, but also a player like Bridges too.
Yeah, and that's the hope, is that what we saw, it wasn't a huge sample size, that lineup, but it was significant enough to take it seriously and to, you know, believe in it as what the Suns should operate with as their starting lineup next season. unless they get, you know, some star power forward or something, which feels unlikely. You know, that's a good group. It's a small ball lineup. It's in the direction that the NBA is heading and has been heading for some time now. And they finally have the personnel to kind of pull it off. They do need Oubre to continue to hit threes, and they probably need Bridges to hit them at a slightly higher clip. Because he's still below average in the league as far as 35.2%. But if he can raise that and if he can continue to cut, he's got the skills defensively to make up for it. The Suns can be a swarming defense with the long arms of Bridges, with the way that Kelly Oubre plays passing lanes and goes for deflections. You know, sometimes it leaves the Suns prone to defensive mistakes or collapses, but that wing tandem is very good together. I think in some matchups it's not as great because Bridges needs to put a little bit of muscle on his frame, but he has the length and the wingspan to make up for it. Even when he's outsized or out-muscled down on the block or something like that, he's just such a smart, intelligent defender, and he has the length to still challenge shots even when he's out-muscled that, you know, he can fare pretty well, surprisingly well, against a lot stronger players in those situations.
Jerry, we're remiss not to hit on his defense here because I've been harping on this throughout the podcast too, and I think we're getting really close to the point where he's going to get more and more national respect as a defender because he maintained a steal percentage this year at 2.5. His block percentage went up even higher from 1.3 to 1.9. His VORP is second best on the team behind Devin Booker this year, and his defensive win shares too is at 2. And I think that's a really big jump for him as well, just from what we've seen, even from year one where he's already an elite defender. But I feel like we're closing in, Joe, maybe even next year or a year after that, he's going to get more and more national respect if Mikal continues on this trajectory where I think he's on the path to being an All-NBA defender.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you look at some of the opponents that he's had to guard and that he's guarded well already in his career. You know, obviously he came into the league as a bit older draft pick, but he's still only 23 years old. He turns 24 in a couple months, but he's still very young. He's an intelligent player that has a high basketball IQ, and that is huge at this level because he already has all the physical attributes. He needs to get a little bit stronger, but he has the length, he has the intelligence, and he has the commitment is the most important thing. I think a lot of guys watch film and, you know, are able to internalize it and learn the tricks of the trade as far as this certain player likes to do this, or this star player has a tendency to do this. And he's going to pick up on all of those little things and add it to his knowledge. And at that point, he's going to be really hard to score on because he's going to know the ins and outs of players' games. You know, obviously there's no shutting down a superstar in this league, but he's going to be one of the better lockdown designated defenders in the NBA once he's in his prime. And defensively, that's probably not as far away as some people might think.
Last one I had for you, Joe. Appreciate the time here. What do you think is the realistic expectation for Mikal Bridges in year three? Because we saw improvements offensively this year. His true shooting percentage went way up. His defense also got a little bit better. But what do you think is the realistic goal for Mikal in year three, which will be a really actually an important year for not only Mikal, but the rest of this young core?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see him thrive in that small ball four position over the course of a full season. I'd like to see him raise his points per game from, you know, around 8.7 to probably anywhere between 10 and 12 would be good. And, you know, 3-point percentage, let's shoot for like 36 to 38, somewhere in that range where it's above average, where he is more of a threat, maybe up the attempts a little bit. I'd like to see him become a more consistent presence on the offensive end. I think defensively, just his natural progression and the fact that he's already so damn good, I think that's going to come naturally. I think the offensive end is where we want to see a little bit more from him next year, which, you know, won't be easy because hopefully they'll have a healthy Kelly Oubre by then. Devin Booker's offense isn't going anywhere. You know, Ricky Rubio still has to take those shots, even if they're not going in, just to keep defenses honest. And Ayton needs his touches as well. But as long as he's not fading into the background and can keep it consistent in that 10 to 12 point range, I think that'd be really promising growth for him next year.
Gerald, really appreciate the time today. I always enjoy talking ball with you. We can go follow Gerald on Twitter if you have not already, at Gerald Bourget. You can read his work over at Fansite NBA and The Step Back. Gerald, appreciate the time as always, man.
Absolutely. Thanks, Evan.
All right, guys, good to do it for our episode here of Locked On Suns. Appreciate everyone listening in as always. Be back with you guys on Wednesday for next episode.